Your initial thoughts on the football game on Saturday night?
This past Saturday night or this coming Saturday night?
last Saturday, and then we're going to transition to next week.
About last Saturday. The initial impressions were Virginia didn't play very well in any of the three phases. Obviously, Randolph made his only field goal attempt, so that's a positive sign. And kickoff returns have been really good with Reinhard Horn. The UVA is currently leading the ACC in kickoff returns.
Well, they had plenty of opportunities on Saturday.
Yeah, I was going to say, the problem is, you know, when you get five chances, you get a chance to up your average. Everything else did not look good. Five interceptions, continued to miss tackles, which is a major theme at this point. Still having some rush lane containment issues with the quarterback. We talked about that weeks ago. So that's really the biggest issue to me is repeated kind of themes and mistakes and things that are going on with this team. That really some of it should be clearing up 6 or 7 games into the season.
You know, could some of this be related, particularly on the defensive side, with the shift from the 3-4 to the 4-3 and trying to move defensive ends to tackles and moving free safeties and strong safeties up to linebacker? And, you know, Virginia's got, I believe, 10 players this year are starting for the first time this season. And on top of that, there's been a slew of injuries. Lord knows they could sure have used Razai Dowling this year. He's either had a hamstring or knee problem all year. What else?
Yeah, I mean, Coach London said today that Razai practiced yesterday, but they still weren't completely sure what his status will be for Saturday with Eastern Michigan. So he continues to fight some nagging injuries. But, I mean, I think you're right. I think it's more the inexperience. Ten guys playing for the first time, and all of the linebackers that are playing a lot, other than Steve Greer, are really playing their position for the first time. And yes, some of them were linebackers before. If you look at a guy like Talaferro, who's starting at middle linebacker, but for the most part, you got a whole lot of guys that either moved up a level, so they're playing linebacker for the first time on the college level, or they didn't get any snaps under Al Groh, in the case of Talaferro or Darnell Carter or some of those guys. So, I mean, really, you're looking at a whole lot of people learning how to play the linebacker position, and ultimately, they're not getting the job done. They're having issues in coverage in terms of passing in their zones with tight ends and underneath routes and stuff like that. And then they're also not cleaning up some issues that the defensive line will have from time to time. So let's say the defensive lineman, Cam Johnson, misses a tackle. Maybe that happens a lot, maybe it doesn't. But it seems like when the defensive line misses a tackle, the linebackers aren't there to gang tackle and clean it up. And to me, that's as big an issue as anything, because ultimately the linebackers do that a lot for good defensive teams. They're there to clean up the mess.
Couldn't agree more. Looking forward now, Eastern Michigan should give the team a chance to regroup. The other team, I believe, they've won one game out of the last 15 or something.
Yeah, the coach is in his second year. He's 1-18.
Yeah,
but he did win his last game.
He did win his last game.
So they're on a little bit of a hot streak.
So what are your thoughts on the Eagles of Eastern Michigan?
Yeah, no, this is a game Virginia should win. I think that's probably pretty obvious saying that. Like you said, they snapped an 18-game losing streak with their first win last week against Ball State. Here's the thing. They were down 21 points in that game. They had to rally from 21 down and win in overtime to snap the streak. In every game they've played this year, they're 1-6. They've given up at least 28 points. Okay? That's the minimum they've given up. So Virginia's offense should get a chance to have some success this week, which has been part of the problem the last couple weeks. And then hopefully the defense can clean up some of its issues. Eastern Michigan's quarterback, I think it's Gillette or Gillette, not sure how to say it, but he's a guy that they're going to have to keep an eye on, and really he's the bulk of Eastern Michigan's offense. He really makes them go. So if they can get a hold on him, they'll be fine.
He has
you're looking for themes.
He's going to
get rid of the themes.
He almost has 100 carries this year for 376 yards. So this guy is as much a runner as he is a thrower.
Yeah, they've been mixing up their offense. Coach London talked about that on Monday. Early on in the season, they were running a lot of pro-style stuff like Virginia runs. Last week, they were running a lot of spread-type formation that we saw last year with Vic Hall and Jameel Sewell. Remember how many times those guys carried the football for Virginia last year as the quarterback? You saw a lot of that out of Eastern Michigan last week. So he's definitely the guy to keep an eye on.
Well, sometimes the quarterback's running for his life. It can be related to the offensive line, which leads me to the Verica quarterback question. Obviously, Mark didn't have a real good game last week against Carolina, and the quarterback tends to get the blame, but sometimes it could be the receivers are in the wrong spot, the offensive line's not doing the job. What's your assessment?
You know, Mark throughout his career has had issues with two things. The first one is getting off of his primary receiver. Sometimes he doesn't do that quick enough. Two of the three interceptions he threw against North Carolina, I think, were of that variety, where he was locked on his primary receiver and threw it anyway. The other thing he's had issues with is his best throw, his great throw that everybody would be like, oh, wow, that was a great throw, and his worst throw, there's a huge gap between the two. So you end up with an inconsistent quarterback. Sometimes he'll miss badly. Sometimes he'll throw the ball 10 feet over a guy's head. So when he misses, he really misses. And I think that really causes issues with rhythm for the offense, with confidence from the receivers, from, you know, big plays. You only get a chance here and there to throw the ball down the field. If you miss on that one, you've thrown away a good opportunity. That might be the only time that pattern will work against that coverage call in a game. So when you have a guy who's that wildly inconsistent, it just leads to problems.
Chris, what kind of – you want to make a prediction on this game in terms of what Virginia will try to accomplish when they have the ball?
Honestly, I think it'll be the same thing. I mean, they're trying to establish an identity of what a Coach London, Coach Lazor offense will be, and that will be a lot of power running with Keith Payne, some outside zone reads with Perry Jones, and then they'll mix in Mark Verica throwing the ball. And hopefully they throw a couple deep. They tried a couple last week to maybe get a guy like Bird open downfield. But ultimately, they're going to try to do the same things every week, and I don't think that'll change this week. The only difference is the team that's trying to stop them hasn't been very good at stopping anybody. So
right.
It may look better this week than it has in other weeks.
Well, Chris, you know, they're halfway through the season, six games in, six games to go. What needs to happen for the last six games to be better than the first six?
I mean, I think off the top, the defense has to tackle better. They're really having a lot of trouble with that. The offense doesn't get as many possessions because of it sometimes. The defense gets worn out because of it sometimes. And ultimately, if you're talking about building a program and going in the right direction, fundamentals have to improve over the course of even season one. You know, I'm not saying that these guys have to go out and hold every team to one field goal at every game, but they do need to go out and be in the right positions more often, gang tackle more often, and make more, you know, better fundamental tackles more often. To me, that would be a sign of the overall program going in the right direction. And there are other things you could pick out, you know, offensive line, things like that, that are in a similar thought process. But ultimately, that's the easiest one for me to see. Tackle well, tackle fundamentally, so that we know that things are going in the right direction.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, as always, we thank you for joining us. Look forward to your next visit, and we will see you at the game, I guess.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right, Chris Wright of the Saber joined us. And, Frank, what do you have to say about that prediction going forward?
I couldn't agree more. I think the Hoos will try to power the ball. There'll be more running, particularly between the tackles. Landon Bradley being out at left tackle has put London in what I think is somewhat of a favorable position, in that he can play Obishi at left tackle and Morgan Moses at right tackle. The team did do fairly well with running the ball against North Carolina, which was one area that I did see some signs of life in that Carolina game. Keith Payne went for 107 yards, and he ripped his longest run of the year on that left when they went off the left side. He went for about 49 yards, I believe, in the third quarter. They did have some nice running plays in the second quarter for a touchdown by Payne, running on the right side down at the goal line. Mark Verica, his first interception, he misjudged where the defensive lineman was relative to being on his shoulder, and that affected the way he tried to throw that. I think he was trying to throw the ball out of bounds. The second interception, no excuse.
It was almost like he just didn't see the defensive guy there.
No, that was the third one.
Sorry.
The second one, he locked in and was determined to throw that ball over the middle no matter what. And there were three defenders at various levels of the defense. It would have taken a Joe Namath bullet to hit pay dirt on that play. And his ball was late and behind the receiver, and number 27 for North Carolina didn't have to move very far to intercept it.
Well, I was going to say, late and behind, that's a prescription for an interception.
The third INT in the third quarter was very sad in that the receiver was open on a deep down and out. The problem was Verica did not have enough height on the ball. He didn't have enough air under the ball. He should have thrown more of a looping sort of pass as opposed to a bullet. The linebacker was just floating out there in coverage. And Verica was, again, locked in on his receiver. And unfortunately, he did generate some boos with that interception. And
I think we may have a caller. Jesse, do we have a caller here? Oh, it's not a caller. Well, it's a real caller. It's Dr. David Nediff. Do you want to introduce Dr. Nediff from West End Orthopedic?
Well, we're excited, as always, to have one of the awesome specialists at West End Orthopedic joining us, Dr. David Nediff. He's an expert in the area of ligament and cartilage surgery on knees, and unfortunately, it's very appropriate this week.
Very timely. Very timely.
Particularly with the surgery that Sammy Zaglinski, the basketball player,
had this week.
Anyway, Dr. Nediff, are you there?
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you.
Glad you could join us again tonight. Sounds like you've had a long day there for West End Orthopedics.
Yeah, another good day.
Well, hang in there. I know you did a lot of good. Let's look at football first, and then we'll talk about Sammy Zaglinski. Don't know if all the emails got to you by way of Chris Kennedy, our good friend over there, but Razai Dowling warmed up with the team. Most decorated player returning this year, and he's unfortunately not been able to play very many downs. He warmed up, but his knee is still bothering him, which he apparently twisted his knee a little bit this week in practice. As you know, Tim Smith, the wide receiver, and Joe Torsha, the tight end, they're both out for the year. Torsha with a shoulder surgery, Tim Smith with ankle ligament surgery. Left offensive tackle Landon Bradley had hand surgery. He's going to miss just a couple of games, but he'll be back. We've got some other players dinged up. Just some general thoughts on all the ankle injuries this year and maybe a few of the knee sprains.
Well, most of the time ankle injuries are just sprains of the ligaments on the outside of the ankle, and those can be sometimes they can go back to play right away, but worst case scenario for a lower ankle sprain, you know, a week, 2 weeks maybe, but then once you start tearing more of the ligaments higher up in the ankle, I'm sure you all have heard of high ankle sprains, that's when you get into really some limited ability to play, and those can take anywhere from 4 to 10 weeks to get back. Potentially could be season-ending injury if it's a really bad high ankle injury. With the knee, a common knee injury that doesn't require surgery and that guys can play with would be like an MCL tear, which is the ligament on the inside of the knee. And those can essentially be braced, and kids can often play with those with the brace on. And then, of course, if you injure one of the main ligaments, like the ACL, that's almost always a season-ending injury that needs surgery.
Doctor, we're joined by Dr. David Nediff of West End Orthopedic Clinic as we have our weekly injury report. And Dr. Sammy Zaglinski of the basketball team had surgery on Tuesday. They just make reference to cartilage work, and they indicate he'll probably be out 8 weeks. What does that tell you about the nature of the surgery?
Well, that's a pretty quick recovery, especially for a basketball player. So in my mind, if I hear a recovery of 8 weeks for a cartilage injury of the knee, most likely he had a small tear in the meniscus, which is the shock absorber cartilage in the knee. And they just go in and we use the scope to remove a small portion of the meniscus. And they can get back to play pretty quick. And more significant injury to the cartilage in the knee, there's another kind of cartilage called articular cartilage, and that's the covering of the bone. That's the pearl-looking stuff on the end of a chicken wing. When you're eating a chicken wing, that's what covers the end of our bone. And it's fairly common, unfortunately, for basketball players especially to have an injury to that cartilage where actually a piece of that cartilage literally peels off the bone. That's a little more serious and can have longer-term consequences. But if they're saying 8 weeks, it's unlikely that he had a significant articular cartilage injury. So hopefully it was just a small meniscal tear, and a 6 to 8 week recovery would seem appropriate for that, and it shouldn't really impact his season.
You know, another player for Virginia on the football side of the equation, tailback and kickoff returner Reynard Horn, is wearing a knee brace for the last couple of weeks, and I suspect, based upon what you've just described, he must have had maybe some minor damage to his MCL as opposed to that ACL. But
yeah, especially in that in a skill position like that, if he had injured his ACL, it'd be unlikely that he'd be able to come back with a brace on. It would just so greatly affect his ability to cut or pivot. He may have had an MCL. He could have even had a minor injury or a small injury to the PCL, which is not quite as critical for cutting and pivoting the way the ACL is. So that may be the case there.
Well, David, I remember from your previous visit on Who's Talking that you've been the team doctor for Longwood University as well as the team physician for the Richmond Kickers.
Right.
And you're also a big fan of the West Virginia Mountaineers. And I noticed in the rankings they're number 20 in the BCS and they're number 20 as well as in the top 25 of the AP, sporting a 5-1 record. Do you get a chance to ever go back up there to see your Mountaineers?
Yeah, I do. I try to go to at least a game a year. I was born and raised there. I grew up going to games in the old stadium, which was down this kind of bowl in downtown Morgantown. And I follow them really closely. I have a good friend who's a team doctor up there, and I'm just a big fan. In fact, one of my former partners, we played UVA and I think the Continental Tire Bowl several years ago.
Yep.
And I made a wager with him, and I lost that wager. So I had to wear a UVA button for like a week at the office.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But, no, I root. My wife went to Virginia, so I root for Virginia all the time, except if they're playing West Virginia.
Yeah, the Mountaineers, you know, I'm old enough to remember that old stadium. I think it was right on the river there, right?
It was right by the river.
Yeah, well, they have a great tradition at West Virginia. Dr. David Needham, we thank you for joining us tonight. Sounds like you've had a long day. We'll let you go. Maybe go home and relax a little bit.
Okay, guys. Thanks for talking.
Absolutely. Dr. David Needham, we're going to go to a break and be back momentarily with Who's Talking.